Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Virgil Salazzo about a business opportunity for the two of us, and we'll also talk to Santino about the new toll booth on the Jones Beach Causeway. And Fredo will come on to give us his best fishing tips. But first, commerce.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Certain flavors instantly transport you back in time, like those classic refreshing freezer pops everyone lived on as kids. That's why you want to try the new Firework Freeze 5-Hour Energy Shot. It will completely blow you away. They have officially taken a beloved freezer pop classic and reimagined it into a delicious, convenient energy shot. It's a serious flavor explosion from the very first sip, perfectly blending juicy cherry, citrusy lime, and that sweet candy-like blue raspberry. Honestly, it tastes exactly like the real thing, but with a major upgrade. You get that iconic freezer pop flavor you crave with absolutely none of the sugar. It's the ultimate zero-sugar portable summer companion that sparks a tasty flavor sensation and keeps you moving, whether you're headed to the beach, working late, or traveling. You need to stock up on this flavor immediately. Ignite your taste buds with a Firework Freeze-flavored 5-Hour Energy Shot, now available online at 5hourenergy.com or find it on Amazon.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The other night, I was browsing the Vistaprint website. Normally, I wait till there's about two outs, two strikes in the Nats game, just to be sure. Just thinking about little ways to make our podcast feel even more organized and professional, I completely lost track of time because there's so many options. We use Vistaprint to order our show's custom notepads. We really do. And what's great is that I have orders from 8, 9 years ago that are still saved. So it's as easy as going and logging into my account. And they're ready to send out again. So I know Nigel uses some of the notepads, the spiral notepads, which is great. And I use some of the notepads that have our logo sort of in a shadow in the background. We actually send those out every year, handwritten notes to our winners from the March Madness tournament bracket.
That's lovely.
I realized how useful it would be to have show-branded notepads for episode prep, just like Nigel, interview questions. Tony just uses a legal pad, but we're working to get them into our own show-branded one. Production notes and all those ideas that pop into your head right before you hit record. Instead of scribbling notes on random pieces of paper, everything stays in one place, and it looks great, too. And you know what? They have recommendations. So once you're part of their system and your logo's in there, they will say, hey, would you like a deck of cards? And you know what? You're sitting there considering.
Michael just passed the reed to me. This is like a relay in the Olympics.
Yeah, don't drop the
baton. It's like the 2x300, if there was such a thing. That's what we love about Vistaprint. They make it easy to turn simple ideas into polished professional products without spending a fortune. Whether you're running a podcast, a small business, or you just want materials that reflect your brand, Vistaprint gives you the tools and real human support to help make it happen. Vistaprint, print your possible. Right now, new customers can get 20% off with the code NEW20 at Vistaprint.com. Remember, that's 20% off at Vistaprint.com when you use the code NEW20. So use the code, people.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I go to the bathroom, and I'm the first one in there. There are four urinals. I pull in, and right behind me, guy says, hey, they let anyone in here. It was John Smoltz. He was to my right. I look to my left. Tom Glavine was on my left, and then I looked at the fourth urinal, which was behind me, and it was Greg Maddux.
You're right in the starting rotation. You're in the starting rotation with them. Fantastic. Right.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
That, to me, is an example of what we do in the summer, that we talk about things that are not necessarily news-related. This, for example, is a catch-up show. We're going to have Jason LaCanfora, and we're going to have Jeff Ma. We're going to catch up.
Yeah.
We're going to say, what have you been doing? That's because baseball is out there, but nothing else is out there. I'm not talking about NBA Summer League. I don't care about that. The World Cup is over. Golf is over. Tennis is on hiatus until the end of the month and the beginning of September with the U.S. Open. There's really nothing out there except football training camps, which is great because the country runs on football.
Yes.
Doesn't run on Duncan. Runs on football. So today is a catch-up show on a lot of levels. We have to concede a bad mistake here on my part. Gary Edel, who, of course, has been so generous to us with my dad's chips, giving us box after box. Right, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'll open it up soon and give it to the kids and take a bunch for myself.
Oh, the kids have their own.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. There is a tasting and it's in Rehoboth, and it's Saturday, and I don't know where. Yeah, I don't know where.
We had a document, and I didn't properly
didn't properly announce this, and it's going to be too late to do it unless... Do we have a website?
I will work on getting the location and see if we can mention it in the mailbag.
Yeah. Okay, so that would be good if we could do that, because the chips are great.
Chips are fantastic.
I mean, my personal favorite is the original flavor. That's just mine, but there's like five or six different flavors that are good.
Jalapeno sriracha fan myself.
You like that, right?
Yeah, that's good. That's got a kick to it for sure. Yeah,
that's
so I also wanted to mention, we're going into August. Our contract year in both PTI and the podcast begins in September. So for bookkeeping purposes, I start the year number one show September and count all the way till the end of August. This is our last show in July. I like to do 150 shows. You know, I mean, I think people listen, and I think you like the continuity of it, and I like doing it. You know, but we are now, this is our 141st show, and we have a month to go. So we're going to take 1 week off in August. We took, I'm pretty sure I took a week off in January or February when I went to Florida to play golf.
Yes.
So this is the second week off, and that gives you 50 weeks.
We got your bonus episode about the flight.
Oh, yeah.
Your confession.
Absolutely. Well, it lasted. I mean, we were like, I don't know, delayed by 6 hours. You know, that's hard to remember. Not hard to remember.
As I recall, that while you were gone, that was when just the deluge of snow and ice opened up over DC.
Yes. Yeah. So that is
the one time I leave my kids.
Go ahead.
So you choose 150. Do you have any issue with it being with the five? Is that jarring to you? Do you think 160 would be cleaner, or are you good with the five?
No, I'm good with 150 because I think that represents three shows a week, 50 weeks, and 2 weeks off. I mean, to me, that's always been a good number. So that's, you know, that's pretty much what we'll do.
Is that a hard stop? Can you not get to 151, or do you need it to be?
We could, but I'm smart enough to go to 150 and stop. Okay. I mean, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens.
We're in the latter innings and we're down a run.
We're not giving it to Kyle Finnegan. Not after yesterday with Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Tarek Skubal left that game up 7-1, and they lost that game. Ugh. And who
seven
did it? Who was
go.
Part of it? Kyle Finnegan was part of it. Of course he was.
Yeah.
This leads me to the
what
Nats.
Could be his last
I didn't
start.
Even right for Detroit. I didn't even know that the Nats were playing. I didn't know the Nats were playing in the afternoon yesterday. I did not know. Nobody on my text chain, which includes Michael and Chris and Chuck Todd and Alan, nobody wrote anything down. So I'm going to guess nobody knew or nobody thought it was important. And they lost. The Nats lost to Toronto. And I have nothing to report on it whatsoever.
Yeah, you savaged one 6 2/3. It was a close game until the late innings. And then Schultz gave up three. I'm not sure he knew they were playing in the afternoon.
Schultz
either.
Is terrible. Schultz is
but
terrible.
Interesting. They brought back Trevor Williams, who came in and got that final out in that inning. And so maybe that gives them some more protection going into the last stretch of the season.
Let me know when they bring back Josiah Gray, okay? Because that's 3 years now. They are now headed tonight. They play at Atlanta. They have
this
four games at Atlanta.
And then?
And four games at Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And here are the numbers you have to here are the numbers you have to concern yourself with. These are on the road against teams that are ahead of them in the division, teams that they know well, and again, ahead of them in the division, substantially ahead of them. If the Nats win three games and lose five, you say, okay, I can live with that, because they're on the road against better teams. If they win even four, you go, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm happy with that. But if it's two or fewer, then you say to yourself, okay, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, this is a sort of a hard count. I mean, you would agree with this, right, Michael? Those are the numbers involved here.
Yeah, it's tough divisional games where you just sit there going, you sort of lose a week of potential catching of teams as well.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's a great opportunity.
It is that. And speaking of the Nats, I haven't asked Coco for this personally, so I'm doing it on the air.
Yeah,
I want to get the Nats Hawaiian shirt and shorts.
Oh,
when is that giveaway?
When
early August, isn't
a thing?
It? Isn't that giveaway in early August?
Yeah, and then, the whole thread then is you then wear it for the next couple of seasons, and it's the flex that you were at that game. It's like the bad day to be a hot dog hat.
Yeah, so I want that.
For a ton of money on the secondary market.
I don't want to sell it. I want to wear it. Yeah. I want the Hawaiian shirt and shorts outfit.
Got to wear that on PTI.
It's a new flying suit.
No, I can't do that. No. I think the shirt's probably really cool, and they give you the shorts.
Yeah.
You know, and I would wear them in the house. I don't think I'd wear them out. I don't think so, but I'd really like to get those. And another mention as we catch up, a friend of the show, our dear friend of the show, Luke Russert, one of the earliest interns at the PTI show, he and his wife are parents.
Yes.
His wife had a baby girl. Was it July 25th? Do I have
July
that 25th. Correct?
Yeah, good numbers. 7 pounds, 15 ounces.
Nice size kid. Catalina Teresa, yes?
Yes.
I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
So we congratulate the Russerts. And now I had one other thing to say, and I never talked about this before. And this was when I was at the member guest at Rehoboth. And my guest was Al Serafino, who I like very much, and I play with a lot at Columbia. And Al came out here, and Al got to see the full Mr. Tony experience. And I will tell you all about it. There are three things that happened where Al just said, oh. One was Comcast went out. You know, it just went out. It was behaving very, very badly. So I called Chip. Chip is my guy at Comcast. I love Chip. Chip is when you call Chip, Chip goes to work.
Yes,
he's a very valuable person at Comcast Comcast and for customers. And he arranged for Steve to come out here. Michael, you were here for this, yes?
I was there for the beginning of the issue, but not for the resolution.
Right. Steve came out and literally climbed up a pole to change things to make sure that our cable system was working correctly. Worked till 9:30 at night.
Yes.
9:30 at night and then left and then came back Sunday. Sunday now. Came back to finish the job. This was tremendous.
Yes.
And Al said, whoa, I don't get that. And I go, well, I don't usually get that, but that was really great.
So
Steve and Chip, we were very happy.
At any point in all those hours, did you ask about the peacock?
I did not ask Steve about the peacock. I did not. You know,
but I sent Steve home on site.
No, I didn't do it. I didn't even think about it, honestly. I never crossed my mind. It should have. Then we had this experience. Al wanted to get some wine, and I said, we'll go to Bin 66. We'll go, because Bin 66 is the greatest liquor store in the world.
Yeah.
We walk into Bin 66, and Al buys a couple of bottles, because we're going to go out to dinner the next night at Dave Ward's house with Jimmy Crilly, and Al wanted to bring some wine, which is really nice. And he goes there, and as he's buying the wine, one of the people that works there, maybe one of the owners, says, I have something for you, meaning me. And he gives me a bottle of wine. Now, it's much larger than a regular bottle. It's a Magnum, and it's a signed bottle of wine. And it's by, can I get off the air for a second?
Sure.
Can you just vamp, and I'll get this.
Tony is leaving the table now. He's walking into another room. This is scintillating play-by-play I'm giving on this. Yeah. I understand that.
No, keep going.
I was hoping you would say that when I walked in there to Bin 66, they gave me an envelope of cash like it was a mafia pickup. All right, he's got a note here.
I got a note here from Chris Carpenter, okay? He says, as a sports fan and a winemaker, it's great to know that folks like you are banging the drum about wine when also talking about sports. Enjoy. And he sent me a bottle of wine. A really good, better than I deserve bottle of wine and a giant bottle of wine. And I was thinking to myself, well, when would I, because you want to drink it all. You know, you want to make sure that everybody uses it. So maybe at a dinner party, the last dinner party I had was, I don't know, in 1959, because I don't do that. Nobody in my house entertains. No, I'm not good at
You're
that. But I also thought I could wait for the kids to grow up, but I'm not going to be around when the kids grow up and drink wine. I'm not going to do that. So Michael has to come up with something we can do to share this wine with people. And Al couldn't believe it. that, you know, a vintner was giving me this big, great bottle of wine. And I said, yeah, well, it happens once in a while. And then he said, well, what should we do for dinner? And I said, well, you know, do you want pizza? And he said, yeah, pizza would be nice. So I said, well, there's this place, and I've talked about this before. I used to go to Casa de Leo, which I thought was a very good restaurant, and I enjoyed it, and I brought home their pizza occasionally. Casa de Leo was replaced by Gio's Pizza Company, G-I-O. Not Andrew Giordano, who was our friend Gio, but Gio's Pizza Company.
And no affiliation to Gio Gonzalez.
None that I know of. Right. Not that I know of. And it's in the same place. It looks the same. The takeout area is the same. So Al calls up and orders a pizza. And we drive over there to pick up the pizza. And then I see the pizza delivery guy, who's been there for, you know, 30 years. And we have a conversation. And I go inside and I meet the owner. And the owner says, people come in here because you talk about it on the podcast. I want to give you a gift certificate. I said, no, you don't have to do that. You don't have. He says, no, I want to. So he did. He gave me a gift certificate, half of which I used the other night. How was that pizza?
It was great.
It was really good.
Yeah, it really was.
So Serafino goes home thinking, oh my God, this is what his life is like. He doesn't see the bad parts of my life. He doesn't see the walking the dog in the snow, you know. He doesn't see the, oh, God, I have to go to the supermarket because we ran out of X or Y. But it was, you know, I then got a fuller appreciation for what, you know, for the nice things that happened to me over the course of time. You know what I mean, Michael? Because sometimes you take it for granted, and then I didn't take it for granted anymore.
I just love this. This was your own odyssey to get back to the house. Stop by, get a pizza, get up some wine. Yeah.
Right. It's me and Odysseus.
Yes.
And I'm waiting for Penelope. Haven't seen her in a long time. Yeah. So that's what it is. You know, so that's what it is. So that was nice. So I think I've covered everything. I don't have anything else.
I did look up famous birthdays for Luke's daughter.
Yeah.
The biggest one that I could see, Walter Payton. That's a pretty good one that she said.
Yes. It'd be certainly, Wilbon would appreciate
that.
Yes,
Wilbon.
I don't know if Luke cares.
I looked for any Bills players.
Wilbon certainly would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Oh, no Bills players at all?
Not that I could find.
But it's great. So good for him and good for her. And today, as I say, today's a catch-up day. We will come back with Jason Lockenfour. Later in the show, Jeff Ma, who's getting up at 3 in the morning to talk to us. And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is one of our favorite bands.
Oh, yeah.
This is Post Sex Nacho. They're right there with Norwegian Soft Kitten, though Post Sex Nacho does not claim that I played with them at any point. And it's a picture of the ballpark, the St. Louis ballpark, where Post Sex Nachos, you know, throughout the first pitch, Cards Cubs.
Yeah.
Throughout the first pitch, the announcer even read the whole band name, and I said, I know them. Not quite a David Aldridge moment, but as close as I have been to date. This is sent to us by Josh Browning in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, who reminds us, former home of a certain journalist who likes to write about people's ages. Yes, she does. Yes, she does. This is a song called All For You by Post Sex Nachos, and it plays in our friend Jason Lockenfour. And I said this was a catch-up day, so Jason has to tell us what he's been up to and what are his streams of income at this point, other than wanna bet. What are you doing?
Well,
what are you now doing?
I'm doing quite a bit. Yesterday we watched Eli Willets play some baseball. My son and I went to Frederick. That wasn't like the main reason we went, but it was part of it. We kind of went to watch mostly the Frederick Keys. But boy, I've got some reservations there. But anywho, so yeah, look, I'm covering the Orioles and the Ravens on a very granular daily basis, and I'm writing columns and multiple items a day in some cases, but you know, some pretty meaty columns multiple days a week at Ravens on SI and Orioles on SI. And if you just Google my name and those words, it will bring up the library of what's going on there. So I'm chronicling those teams on a daily basis. I'm covering
for
the
Sports
NFL.
Illustrated. Yes, yes, for Sports Illustrated. Yes, okay.
Yes.
I mean, you can
I'm
say
really,
that.
Well, Sports it's kind of tricky because I'm also doing a daily digital show through a production company that basically sort of is in conjunction with Minute Media, who owns Sports Illustrated. It's kind of complicated, as everything is these days. But I'm also doing a daily digital show on the Ravens and the Orioles, but I'm bringing in people like Sean Payton and Sean McVay and, you know, guests who can add a real national perspective to these local teams, and also talk about some things that have some carryover. So yes, I'm looking for all the audience I could get, and you can find that show on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/@BigPlayBaltimore, Big Play is the production company, and subscribe for free. We always appreciate that. I'm doing that daily digital show, and then I'm also covering the NFL, some for Fansided. I'm covering the NFL quite a bit for some publications that are based in London that you will find on my Twitter whenever I am writing, and I'm writing quite a bit. And then I may be relaunching one a bit with Nick Bakay, who I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with. I talked to Nick again yesterday. And
what happened to Beltway Ben? What happened to him?
Beltway Ben's great. Ben's great, but Beltway Ben's schedule now, he's producing a morning show, and he's doing a lot of reporting from the ballpark, and it just our schedules just don't align anymore. So, but I still believe in the concept, and there's some other people who believe in the concept. So the hope is to be doing one of that, not 7 days a week anymore like I used to, but 2 to 3 days a week in the football season, heavily focused on the NFL. Again, with the great Nick Bakay, schedule permitting, and it sounds like his schedule is going to permit. And then, yeah, you know, I'm also open for business, Tone. So if you're looking for a writer or a talking head or whatever.
I need a handyman. I need somebody to fix the grill. You know, it's not lighting the way it should. And so
have
I need
you tried
that,
cleaning
and I
it
have
first?
Some. Michael cleaned it, and then you know, I've got some weather stripping that I need, and I got a towel bar that's got to go up. But you don't do that kind of work. I need a handyman.
I mean, I don't do
Jimmy
it very
Jones
well.
Used to be.
I don't do it very well. The cleaning of the grill, I'm not too shabby with. But no, we've had some gutter issues here, Tone, and I went with a professional. Yeah. I did not get up on that ladder and try it myself. So there's no way I'm going to go to the palatial Kornheiser estate and just, you know, start putting holes in walls and stuff like that.
That's okay. All right, well, so have you noticed? I just noticed this like 2 days ago. ESPN in full conversion mode going to the NFL. Not this other stuff. They're going, you know, around the clock NFL, which is a really smart thing to do, right? Because football, doesn't football drive the bus? It's football,
well,
isn't
they bought the NFL Network, right? I mean, this is those conversations have been going on. My God, I don't think I've been at the NFL Network for, 15, 17 years. And people still come up to me sometimes and they're like, you're the guy at the NFL Network. I'm like, well, you know, that was several children ago, but whatever, sure.
Right.
But those conversations were going on then. Like, that was sort of, there was always this undercurrent of like, you know, is Bornstein going to, like, because his ESPN ties, is this thing going to go back under the ESPN, go under the ESPN umbrella, and what's the future of NFL Network? I mean, it literally has been going on since the thing was 4 or 5 years old. So I think a lot of people figured that this was where it was heading eventually, and that the NFL was going to continue to expand both globally in terms of where games are played and then just numerically and how many games were played. And that back then we weren't thinking of, the whole streaming thing when 20 years ago was not on people's radar, but certainly the idea of what are they going to do to both broadcast this extra inventory, but then prop up, right, all the ancillary bells and whistles around this growing inventory. And so ESPN was always, you know, figured to be at the forefront of that, and they are, and they will be. And there's also opportunity because things are still being sorted out, and we're, you know, we're going to eventually get 18 games. We're going to eventually have a game in some far-flung place. You know, I don't know, 16 of those 18 weeks or 15 or 14 of those 18 weeks, but certainly at least that many. And they clearly believe in the NFL, and the NFL believes in them. And this is sort of where it's at. I'm old enough to remember them being criticized for not covering the World Cup, you know what I mean, enough, or whatever that kerfuffle was. But they're not as invested in that, and they're not, you know, they're not even showing U.S. men's national team games anymore, let alone the full World Cup. So, yeah, I think the pivot is real.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking at stories about Aaron Donald and Kirk Cousins and Kyler Murray, and the games are still over a month away.
Oh, yeah.
The games are over a month away, and I'm excited by it, like I'm excited by no other sport. And you know football better than you know anything else. Do you assume that Aaron Donald is going to play? Do you assume that Kirk Cousins will be the starter for the Raiders for 5 weeks, 8 weeks, yeah, 10 weeks, 2 weeks? Do you assume Kyler Murray beats out J.J. McCarthy? Wilbon crushed J.J. McCarthy last night on TV. Crushed this kid. Is he any good, J.J.
Yeah.
McCarthy?
Well, I mean, if you couldn't be good with Kevin O'Connell, and I know that it was only, you know, not the longest runway in the world, but probably long enough. Certainly was long enough for him to say, boy, I better go get Kyler Murray. There's questions there. Yeah, I mean, these are things. Look, Sean McVay came on the Daily Flock Show. Again, youtube.com/@BigPlayBaltimore. And, of course, I asked him about it. And, of course, as these things go, we had great video and audio the whole time, and then it starts to get garbled at the end when he's talking about Aaron Donald. And we couldn't use all of it on the show, but certainly I was able to transcribe all of it and write about all of it. Yes, I've long been convinced that Aaron Donald is coming back, and I was even more convinced after spending, you know, 35 minutes with Sean McVay. That's going to happen. I can't tell you exactly when, and if there were to be some sort of a medical situation or a setback, then that's a different story. But the road he's on right now, their schedule the first 5 weeks is nuts, Tone. So, like, I don't know that he wants to come out of retirement and fly to Australia and then play in Denver in altitude and then go to Philadelphia for them as a 10 a.m. kickoff and then fly back across the country for a primetime game against the Giants and then fly some, like, so I think he probably, you know, gets this thing contractually done in the next, I don't know, 10 to 14 days. And then they come up with a plan that gets him into the mix at some point in the season. Doesn't necessarily have to be for that game in Australia. And away they go. The Cousins thing, had a long chat with Rich Gannon, who's a part of their pregame, preseason, all their preseason stuff. And obviously Rich is keeping close attention to that team. He won an MVP there. You know, Rich is watching the whole Tom Brady Mendoza dynamic. And yeah, look, they're still sorting out their offensive line. It makes sense to give Cousins first crack. It makes sense to let Mendoza learn from how Cousins operates in a system that Cousins knows like the back of his hand from playing in it in Minnesota under Clint Kubiak. Like, all that was done very conscientiously. All this was set up in a very reasoned manner with Tom Brady's paw prints all over it. And while Tom Brady is starting to make me wonder, you know, the heel turn in the WWF and smacking Logan Paul or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on with Tom Brady. But, like, everything I hear is he's totally invested in this Mendoza thing. And he's sitting down with the kid, and he's talking about how to read people's eyes. And he's talking about how to read people's hands. And he's talking about what to do in the final 3 seconds before that ball is snapped to you. And all the nuance. So, yeah, I think that's I think that's very real. Like, I think they have a plan, and they're probably going to stick to it. And maybe it's week three, maybe it's week five, whatever. But, yeah, it's something I've done a fair amount of reporting on. And then, that's Kyler Murray's job. Like, I don't even think that's really a competition. I think the question is, can McCarthy look good enough in the preseason that
they get something for him to get him out of that building, because I'm not sure about that dynamic.
Yeah, Wilbon felt the same way. He felt the same way. So you have a coaching change in Baltimore after a very, very long time. A coaching change. Optimistic or pessimistic about who's coming in and how the team will react?
Optimistic. But like to a point, you know, if you look at the sports books, they've got the Ravens to win 12 games, almost, you know, as much as anybody other than the Rams. They've got the Ravens, you know, with some of the best odds in the AFC, some of the best odds in football to win a Super Bowl. I kind of think you have to walk before you sprint in that regard. Like, there's been two first-time coaches in the history of the NFL who won a Super Bowl the first year. You know, one was Don McCaffrey right here in Baltimore, Super Bowl V. It was Don Shula's team. He'd been an assistant McCaffrey for 10 years. You know, it was a very different situation than a guy coming into it, right, you know, from afar. And the other time is Seifert, and we all know that was a dynasty built by Bill Walsh that was handed to him. And he had been there for 10 years. So this ain't that. So I'm not sure they're doing that. But Harbaugh had to go, like, his ways and his mannerisms and everything. It was almost 20 years. Everything had sort of reached its natural inflection point to, hey, you go there and we go here and, you know, Godspeed. I think the defense is going to be pretty close to a monster pretty soon. I believe completely in Jesse Minter's ability to turn that around as a defensive coordinator. Now, he's also the head coach, and we'll see about the head coaching part. I think he certainly can do it and will do it, but I think it's also natural to expect and a learning curve there. And the offensive side of the ball is where I had the most trepidation as things were coming together, because it seemed to be lacking in proven commodities there as well. The more people I've talked to about the 30-year-old offensive coordinator, Declan Doyle, including Sean Payton, who created him, right? He took him from Iowa as a grad assistant, brought him to New Orleans, then brought him to Denver, and then he spends 1 year with Ben Johnson, and he's hired at age 29 to go run Lamar Jackson's offense. So I wondered if it was too much too soon. I've done a lot of reporting, months of reporting on that situation. And yes, I know Sean Payton's not going to tell me, oh, no, he's no good. Like, he's part of Sean Payton's family tree. No. But just right. what you glean and what you hear sort of on background, and the more you dig, I think the young man's got a chance to be special. I do think, though, that he's probably a tight end short. He might be a wide receiver short. I know your defense is going to have to be the star. But over time, I believe he'll grow into the job, and he'll be really good. The problem for Declan Doyle is, do you only have Lamar Jackson for 1 year? And the way that contract's structured right now, you only have Lamar Jackson for 1 year. And Lamar Jackson spoke yesterday, and he does this sort of, you know, he plays the games he sort of always plays when they ask him about his contract, and he clearly wants to have it both ways publicly. But he's an assassin as a negotiator, and he's got them in a corner, and I don't think he's budging. And they either give him everything he wants in the next couple of days, certainly the next couple of weeks before this season starts, or they don't. But if they don't, I believe he's playing somewhere else in 2027.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I would never even consider that Lamar Jackson would leave unless they wanted to get rid of him because he had a very bad playoff run again or something like that. And they said he can't win the Super Bowl and no point in having him. But I would never consider
part of it. But they clearly have reservations here. I mean, Patrick Mahomes gets a new deal. It's no fuss, no muss. Like, Dak Prescott has to hem and haw for a while, who's nowhere near Lamar Jackson, and he's older than Lamar Jackson. But he eventually gets his bag before training camp starts, right? Like, the fact that we're now in training camp, and this is the second negotiation that's been protracted, it's been janky, it's been weird. I mean, this guy did have a trade demand in the past. Like, the whole league colluded against him. Like, there's just a lot that's happened here. And for them to be back at this point, with him playing on basically a Fugazi one-year $50 million deal with an $85 million cap hit next year and a no-trade clause and a no-franchise clause that he had to, you know, just get real stuck in to get the last time around. There's something holding them back. There's several things holding them back. I've written extensively about this at Ravens on SI. But it's very real, Tone. Like, it's almost August now. Like, and he will cut these negotiations off and say, I'm a football player now. I'm not a player agent, and that's what they're up against.
This is so fascinating. It's good to hear you. It's good to catch up, and then soon we'll put you on every single week, and it'll make us happy. Thank you, Jason.
I'm here, brother. Trust me.
Good luck with the home on the homestead there, Tone. A good handyman, hard to find.
I got to find a handyman. Jason Lockenfour. I'm rooting for you, brother. Thank you. We will come back with another person we haven't talked to in a while, Jeff Ma.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Post-Sex Nachos. This is called The Sound of You, and we have a note that accompanies it. It says Todd Hart here. Yes, that Todd Hart from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, is here to announce that the Post-Sex Nachos have made it to the big stage. They will be performing tonight, July 30th, and Friday, July 31st at 9:40 p.m. on the Jones Park main stage at the Mile of Music Festival in Appleton, Wisconsin. 200 artists, 35 venues, and one great mile of music. Thank you for all the support you've given the band. We look forward to some lecheeseries from the audience and TK salutes. The show starts at 9:40 p.m., so don't expect you to make it, but we encourage all littles and bigs to make it if they can. In case either of those days does not work for folks, Post-Sex Nachos will also be performing on Saturday night at Emmett's Bar at 10:10 at night at the Mile of Music. Michael, if people like Post-Sex Nachos want to get their music played on the show, how do they go about it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And they play in Jeff Ma, and I said this was a catch-up show. We caught up with Jason Lockenfour. We're going to catch up with Jeff Ma, preparatory to all the bets he's going to make for us when the football season starts. But what have you been doing, and what are you doing now?
I have a day job, which is I work for a company called Troon, which is a golf course management company. It's sort of like Marriott for hotels. We've been working on a lot of stuff there. I actually took some time to coach my 9-year-old's water polo team, and we just went to Junior Olympics and finished 13th out of 60. So
that's great.
We have four practices a week for an hour and a half to 2 hours for 9 and 10 year olds. So it's pretty intense. It was almost like a second job. And then,
Impressed? Wait, hold it. Are they impressed that you are a water polo player yourself from MIT? Are they impressed by that?
I don't think anything impresses 9 and 10 year olds really, but like, no, I was a coach, I coached MIT for 7 years and we, I was never much of a player, but to be honest, I was a really good coach. And so coaching 9 and 10 year olds was pretty fun because I don't know, Michael, if you've gotten into this, but the coaching for kids is not very good usually because it's volunteers and it's people that don't really know what they're doing and sometimes aren't that committed. But I took it very seriously and it was a lot of fun and rewarding, and it's something I'm going to continue doing with my kids.
Good. That's good. 13th out of 60 is very good. That's very good.
Yeah, we're happy with that.
What else are you doing?
There's also like gambling during the summers. Then the World Cup obviously came up. That was an interesting thing to gamble on because of it's a very incredibly liquid market, meaning like a lot of people bet on it. And a lot of people that bet on it bet with their hearts. So there was a lot of value there. We've been doing a lot of work on betting Calcuttas in the majors. So we have these really big Calcuttas where, there's millions of dollars at stake and, you own all these different golfers. So that's been pretty fun. And actually the most fun thing I did is I just got back from the Kingdom in TaylorMade, where I got fitted for new clubs and got fitted by, the guys that fit the pros.
Wow. So you're going to get all new TaylorMade clubs?
Yeah, I just got all new TaylorMade clubs. Good. New shafts, all that kind of stuff. And it's funny because obviously I'm like a 15 handicap, so I'm not that good, but like, when you get out there and they look at all the things you do and they make all the corrections and they give you all the different shafts and things like that, it does seem to make a difference. So I'm actually going to play this week and we'll see. I'm dying to play with these new clubs and sitting in my office. So I'm excited for them.
All right, let me go backwards on some of the things you said. First of all, everybody knows the word Calcutta, but I don't know what it is. Can you explain to a layman what exactly a Calcutta is?
Yeah, so generally speaking, it's kind of like a betting competition where, and it happens a lot of times at like tennis clubs and at golf clubs where essentially...
Golf clubs all the time. all the time, yeah. Member guest, all the time.
Yeah, you sort of have rules where, depending on how you do in the Calcutta, you win a percentage of the overall pot. And, you know, like in the Calcuttas that we do for the majors, the golfer that wins the whole thing gets about 19% of the overall pot. And there's also all sorts of bets, like who has the best score on day one, who has the worst score on day one, that makes a, you know, a percentage of the pot, 1%. And so you auction off every golfer. In the case of the majors, we do every golfer the top 50, and then we do the rest in lots of about 5. And, you know, you're having an open auction, so you don't know the size of the overall pot. So from a modeling perspective, you're trying to, you know, dynamically price how you think this person is going to do and what size you think the pot's going to be overall to figure out how much you're going to spend.
So let me go to the two majors that were won by people nobody had ever really heard of. Guys in their 30s, had been around for a while, but had not won. Aaron Rye won the PGA, and then just recently Ryan Fox won the British Open. What effect on a Calcutta do people winning that really nobody probably bet on individually, or did they?
Well, so that's the thing. Like, we have, in the case of Aaron Rye, I think he was top 50, so I think he was still auctioned off by himself. But Ryan Fox was in what we call these groups, where he was grouped with like 4 or 5 other golfers. And you know, it's kind of like a little bit of like a throw in or a grab bag or something like that. So it does, you know, the guy that owned Ryan Fox made quite a bit of money in that Calcutta,
yeah,
because he was, yeah, a long shot.
I would imagine. I mean, and he not only was a long shot, but he played fast. Everybody liked that. Let me go back to the World Cup. You said it was a liquid market and people were basically betting with their hearts and not their heads. Did you get any sense of people betting with their heads? I mean, was Rufus involved in this? Did he like Spain? Did he like France? Did he like England, Argentina? I mean, what was your sense of World Cup betting?
Yeah, Rufus was very involved with it. You know, there's these new things called prediction markets. I've been talking to you about them since last year, and they've been coming into a lot of prominence. And so, you know, Rufus, I think, had, you know, multi-millions of dollars at stake on every single game that was out there. And
really,
I think he made a, you know, like what you're trying to do in these markets is try to, you know, even in soccer, there's exact outcomes that you can bet on. So you can bet on like Spain to win by 1-0 and things like that. And oftentimes Rufus in these bets is taking the other side. He's taking like the no on some of these things because people think that the certain outcomes have much more likely, you know, probability of happening than they actually do. So Rufus is taking the no. And Rufus has been, we just talked about this on Bet the Process this week. You know, Rufus had, I think, $39 million of volume on the Open Championship. And because of all of these different, you know, prediction markets, he's able to get down a lot more money than he ever was before.
This is fascinating to me. And when you say 39 million, I mean, my head explodes when something like that happens. Did you bet the World Cup? Did you do it yourself? I would never have done that.
I did it more casually than anything. You know, I had a few friends that were really experts. I don't know anything about soccer, and I probably share a bit of your attitude about soccer also. Like, well, why are they diving? Why aren't they scoring? Is that guy really that hurt? He seems fine. Oh, he is fine. That's great. It looked like he needed a stretcher a minute ago, but now he's split back playing. So, you know, like but you know, it was on, and when it's on, right, and there's something fun to watch, I mean, it's nice to have some money on it. So yeah, I bet a little bit of it here and there.
I've wanted to talk to you about this for about a month. Brendan Sorsby, the Texas Tech quarterback, and what happened to him, that he was allowed by the NFL to become eligible for a supplementary draft, except the NFL said we're not going to have one this year, and they encouraged him to apply to the draft after this college football season, the next one. He appears to be being punished for gambling, which he has admitted. That he had tremendous gambling issues while he was at college, even betting on his own team, I believe, not against his own team, but betting on his own team. What are your thoughts about what has happened to Sorsby and what should happen to athletes who bet on their own sports?
Yeah, I think it's hard, right? Because he obviously made a mistake. He obviously should be punished. I think that, you know, the idea that he could play right away at Texas Tech or even just, you know, get out of college and not be punished, I do think he needs to be punished. Now, obviously, it's tough because there's not no overall, you know, governing body of any of this stuff.
Right.
The main issue to me, and I think we talked about this a little bit in the fall, is that there's just not enough education right now for these athletes. And we're a bunch of hypocrites because we're out there talking about sports betting. Sports betting's in everyone's faces. It's on advertising and the marketing dollars that are being spent. And it's so easy to just download an app and start betting. And no one's educating people as to, you know, the fears here. Now, again, an athlete should know better, so he should get punished. But I also think that we need to be doing a much better job educating everybody of the, you know, the perils of this, right? Like, again, like a kid, teenagers, like with all of these different things that are out there, are able to get access to this stuff. And, you know, I mean, obviously with the 9 and the 7-year-old that I have, I'm thinking all the time about, like, how do we get ahead of this and make them educated and make them understand that this isn't a winning proposition. Most people don't win. And beyond that, obviously, from an athlete perspective, if you do this, you can jeopardize your future.
Would you limit the type of betting that is allowed now? I mean, it's one thing to bet on games and outcomes of games and first halves and stuff like that. But what is called a prop bet, these very small things about individual athletes and what they will do in a very small area, would they seem to be the ones that create the problem? Would you restrict them, or do you take the whole package and just say, no, just teach people what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge is if you restrict them, there's still like the black market, there's still the illegal gambling, so you're not going to get rid of these things totally. Certainly having some level of what can be bet and some oversight, because again, like a lot of these sports books are a bit predatory in what they're offering from a betting perspective, and the reason they offer a lot of these bets is they can make a lot of money off of them. Like people, you know, do want to bet these things that are recreational bettors, and the more stuff they have, the better. You know, there's not, again, like this thing was rushed into the U.S. and everyone's now trying to make as much money as they can right now. So there's not a lot of thoughtfulness about exactly what you're saying, which is like, how do we create an environment that is safe, an environment that cannot be manipulated. But I think, again, it's like anything that you create a lot of restrictions around, it's not going to solve every problem.
I don't know how it works, but I don't think we have even hit close to what we're going to hit in terms of these prop bets, in terms of not necessarily NFL or NBA players, but marginal players trying to cash in because they don't make enough money to sort of insulate themselves against the betting. Don't you think that's going to happen?
I mean, it is happening. I think the reality is that we are catching people now because of the fact that it's legalized. Yeah. I think in the past, these things weren't caught. I mean, there's been a lot of like these sensational tweets on Twitter about when like Jackson Coivin wins and like some better bet, you know, a couple $1 million on him. And that
million dollars on him.
Well, the bettor is actually making more money than Coivin made for winning, you know, the tournament.
Yeah.
And so those types of, again, these are like sensational tweets. These are the things that ultimately you worry, like a Jackson Coivin is not going to jeopardize his future, but there are other golfers or there are other, like individual sports are tough because, yes, they can be manipulated. And to your point, you know, an individual and a prop bet can be manipulated. So, yeah, I think you're right to be concerned about this. I think the positive is that so far people are getting caught. And so hopefully these are going to be cautionary tales that make people less inclined to do this.
Yes, I do think that the technology now, you know, when you use a phone and you have these apps that you go through, they're going to catch everybody. They're going to catch everybody who does that because there's going to be a paper trail, right? There is.
Yeah, there's a paper trail. There's KYC. There's all of that. So, I mean, you know, you got to be very... you got to be kind of dumb to try to do this at this point, like especially on like the, you know, the insider trading stuff and that kind of thing.
That's what I agree with that. All right, well, good luck with your clubs, the TaylorMade clubs. I hope they work. And and you're going to come back when it's time to do sports, right? Betting.
Yeah. Can we talk about one other thing, Tony? This is the charity event that we're doing. Yeah.
Oh,
so
sure.
One of the things I do, and I'd love if we could get you and Michael out there, but like at the end of August, August 29th and 30th, I actually called Greg Garcia, invited him to it, but he only responds to me when he wants a discount at a Troon club, which is what he often does. So, you know, the guy is touring with Nate Bargatze and is asking me for $20 off a tea time at a Hilton Head course that we run. But, you know, we do this charity event up in Napa at Silverado. And we do it in benefit of two groups. One's the Napa Valley Grape Growers, who support all the farmers in Napa, and the other is Connolly Ranch, which is a great charity that helps educate kids about food and where food comes from. And the events at Silverado, which obviously is a championship course, they just got their tour event back for not next year, but the season after. We play, you know, 36 rounds of golf. We get some of the best wineries out there. We have a Vintner's Cup where the actual winemakers play with three people, and they're kind of playing against each other as, you know, teams. And, you know, one of the wineries we have out there is a winery called McDonald's. They're one of the hardest cabs in the world to get. They have a 13,000 person waiting list. You buy a cab from them for, you know, $300 and you can resell it right away because people just can't get it, but you can buy these things if you're on the mailing list and resell it for 3-4x right away. That guy, Alex McDonald, is going to play and give away a bottle of his wine to all the people that play with him. And, you know, we have a bunch of other wineries that are coming, like Harlan, the Harlan family is coming. They make some of the most expensive cabs in the world. So if you guys want to come out the 29th and 30th and play together, I'd love to activate the littles that are out there to come, you know, come join this. But you can go to golfwithaccess.com and see all the events that we do. And this is one of the events, and love to activate the littles for this.
Lovely. That's lovely. That's great. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls. Wow.
That's great.
Michael, Silverado's a big-time course, isn't it?
Big time. Now I need a full what's in the bag, though.
Can you even imagine how much money that is for a bottle of wine?
It's going to be.
So you want to play with that guy. You want to play with that guy.
Yes.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back with Email and Jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh, here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
That's Biff Gaut, and attention must be paid. Must be paid. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You would as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you'll be thrilled. And got a note here from Patrick Smith in Annandale, Virginia, this coming Saturday. He has tickets for the 7 p.m. Banana Bowl game at Prince George's Stadium. That's Savannah Bananas.
They're very good. I mean, people, they sell out everywhere they go.
Yeah. He says it's also the Summer of Littles, so there's only one thing for him to do. Celebrate Summer of Littles at the Banana Ball Game. Please tell any and all Littles at the Banana Ball Game to meet him at 5 p.m. at the pregame plaza. He'll be wearing his Calvert Woodley Home of La Cheeserie shirt. And I also want a very special wish a very special birthday to me mom, who's That's turning lovely. 85 years old today.
Lovely.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Absolutely lovely. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, oh, don't it hurt deep inside to see someone do something to her. Oh, don't it pain to see someone cry, especially when someone is her. Silence is golden, but my eyes still see. The title of the song is Silence is Golden. It's the Tremolos. And Nigel didn't think I knew that one. And I had to work it out. I had to get all the way to the end in my head with the lyrics. But then I got it, and I said, Silence is Golden, the Tremolos. Thanks to our guests today, Jason Lockenfora and Jeff Ma. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave a review.
You would not have seen this, but one of the Savannah Banana pitchers came out and did Phantom of the Opera and then threw out the first pitch.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, who they everywhere they go, they sell out.
Huge crowds.
Right? I mean, people enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. People really
they're
love
great
it.
Players, obviously.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
couldn't you
is it Kerry Wood doing stuff with them now?
Well, he did that one he threw out the first pitch behind his back or over his head or something like that. From Adam Jameson, the title of this is Tim Kirkchin, National Treasure. And it just says thank you.
Yes.
And that's because of Tim and the urinal story.
Yes.
From Tim. What?
We love
what?
Him. We love
from
Tim.
From Tim Knobloch. I recall an interesting bathroom encounter. Was watching a podcast being recorded, enjoying a great breakfast. There was a break from recording. I took off for the restroom down a long, ugly-looking hallway. While focusing on my bladder,
words hurt.
A man stood next to me. I didn't look up. First words out of his mouth. So what do you think? Wouldn't the hallway look better if we had a mural painted on the walls? Do you know of anyone? I had honored to be standing next to an angry orange man. Not sure what to say. Couldn't think fast of us. So I just said no. That's from Tim in Granite Falls, North Carolina, formerly Rockville, home of Madison Bumgarner, who now plays a lot of pickleball, apparently. From Dave Majer, I hope I pronounced that correctly, in South Euclid, Ohio. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing about Tim Kirkchin's encounter with Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz at the urinal. I had a similar experience shared with me by a colleague who visited a bathroom at a NASCAR event and happened to spot Paul Newman in the next urinal. The colleague exclaimed, "My God, you're Paul Newman." Newman replied, "Yes, I am. I would shake your hand, but I'm busy at the moment."
And by the way, can I just say, for all the people that want to send meeting famous people stories in the bathroom, we're done with it.
Oh, we're not doing it anymore?
I don't think we want to catch us in the last
Here's one. In the early 70s, I was at an Italian restaurant in Fort Lauderdale. When I visited the men's room, Jackie Gleason was next to me at the urinal. I didn't say anything, but should have said, "How sweet it is, DG." Ben York from Santa Monica, California. Do you think that if 8 ears of corn cost $30 in 1988, Ray Kinsella would have still have built the field? Would Shula Shaw have played again? Would father and son shared one last catch? It's a lot of money, isn't it? From Delton Vereen in Spartanburg, South Carolina. As I was listening to the podcast today while driving to my dad's place on the South Carolina coast, I had to stop the podcast and rewind it to make sure I heard correctly when you said that you spent $30 at a roadside stand for 4 tomatoes and 8 ears of corn. Yeah, tomato surprise. That's what I did it. Was this corn a special organic heirloom, non-GMO, bicolor variety only found in your neck of the woods? The tomatoes must have been as big as softballs. They're pretty big.
Yeah.
Did you buy the tomatoes by the pound? Maybe the proprietor was holding his thumb on the scale when he weighed the tomatoes to inflate the price. I grew up with a guy whose family had a produce stand, and he told me they never published prices and would look at the car the customer was driving when deciding on what to charge. That's good. Maybe you should invest in an old beater car just to have for trips to roadside produce stands. How about an old Subaru? We know how much you love Subarus. Mm. Here's a haiku for corn and tomatoes from Shad. I think you were charged what they thought you could afford. Dynamic gouging. It was a lot of money. $30. Feels 8 years of corn and 4 tomatoes.
Feels like a lot. Again,
from
it's
Tyler.
Tomatoes.
It must be. From Tyler in Strathmore in Alberta, Canada. Please let Tony know that my local grocery store is selling ears of corn for 64 cents each. And that's 64 Canadian, so around 45 cents for you. You can get a lot of corn for 30 bucks. I'll cook you up a couple of ears for the Labor Day weekend, Tyler. Yeah, I mean, the corn is just white corn. It's not like multicolored corn. It's not golden bantam or anything. No, it's just plain old white corn. This is from Will Smith. There's a lot of Will Smiths out there in Warfordsburg, Pennsylvania. Purchase today, $4 per dozen, yellow and white mixed sweet corn, homegrown, picked an hour ago by a married couple who grow locally, Bedford, Pennsylvania, Walmart parking lot. Wilbon can pick you up a dozen midway on his two-hour car ride to Pittsburgh. My family of four has the following birthdays, 10-4, 7-11, 123, and 9-9.
Very good numbers.
From Brandon Borzelli in Lebanon, New Jersey. You're now running some sort of racket akin to something from Goodfellas. You call for Matt Crook to be DFA'd in the morning. By afternoon, he's been DFA'd. Yeah, he's terrible. It's terrible. What day is the Lufthansa heist? I want to be sure to be at Idlewild Airport on time to get you the key. From Greg Lerner in Scarsdale, New York. On Monday's show, you mentioned you had played poorly with your high school friends, but that you had a 43 on the back nine in your final round. I'd like like to suggest a new addition to the TK lexicon, but first a little background. A year or two ago, at the behest of Harvey Stenger, you reached out to a fellow Binghamton alum named Charlie Weissman. He wasn't home, but you recounted on the show your highly amusing exchange with his wife, who took your message, having no idea who you were. Like you, Charlie is an avid golfer, a quite high beta golfer. I'm guessing that last weekend you might have shot what at our club we call a Weissman. A Weissman being any nine-hole score that is 10 or more strokes higher than the other nine in the round. My guess is that you were good for at least one Weissman every few rounds. I'm offering you a shorthand way to describe your day at the links. P.S. Keith Mitchell got a lot of press for his Weissman, 41-29 during the first round at the U.S. Open. Yeah, 41-29 is a very big difference. I had a 43, and I it wasn't 10 or 12. I mean, before that, I was around 50, 51, 52. I don't know that it was 10. John Erickson in San Diego. You read lyrics of Your Sylvain, and we got no mention of clowns in my coffee. Was it clouds in my coffee or clowns in my coffee or crowds in my coffee or grounds in my coffee? Nobody knows. From Alex Lau in New York City. Your reference to Cade Cavalli wilting on Wednesday show made me realize how much you refer to pitchers as plants. I didn't know I did that. If Strasburg was the orchid, I guess that makes Cavalli a fiddle leaf fig plant and the Nats bullpen, the colorless flowers that have been dead for 5 days that the bodega down the street from me is still trying to sell. No,
ficus tinica.
From Cameron. Dear Dr. Captain Farmer Hoff Woff, greetings from the 19933 of Bridgeville, Delaware, which I know. Chuck and Roxy, episode 220. As you may recall, I have the privilege of being the father to the young Mia Steele Cameron, who sang Reginald's theme song that Nigel now plays at least once a year and you refer to as the Bill Grant version.
Oh, you know, we've actually got that. You want to hear that real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, Sean, do you have that?
Sure.
See the monkey, he's scratching, watching his iPad, smoking and laughing, hanging with Bill Grant, tap, tap, pat, and Marsh Purple, attaching. Nigel's going to the zoo. Nigel's got the bites. By two, sometimes throws poo, but he's had too much Johnny Walker Blue.
Fantastic.
So great.
The letter continues. We ventured across the Bay Bridge to our nation's... Yeah. Did she didn't say Bud Grant.
I think she says Bill Grant.
Bill Grant. At least she doesn't say Biff Grant. We ventured across the Bay Bridge to our nation's capital. We went to Zoo to meet Reginald. I attached pictures for News Channel 8 showing Mia her stuffed version of Reginald made by Roxy, the same one that you have, minus his banana sent to her by loyal little John Miller. She was so excited to take her Reginald to meet Reginald, as you can see in the pictures. When I asked her what her favorite part of the zoo was, she told me seeing the baby elephant was cool, but meeting Reginald with my Reginald was epic. An interesting side note, while we were there, we did see Reginald meeting with Christopher Nolan, Kerry Russell, and Chris Saliz. Apparently, Reginald is in talks to star as Rhett Butler in a remake of Gone with the Wind opposite Kerry as Scarlett O'Hara. Saliz is banking the whole project. Thank you for an old Orange Man's podcast, making my daughter's first trip to the National Zoo unforgettable. And there are lovely pictures.
That's great.
Oh, and I just heard back from Gary from My Dad's Chips. The event will be Saturday, August 1st at the Fresh Market in Rehoboth from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Try the chicken salad and croissant deal while you're there.
And one more from Jordan Chance in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, formerly of Lindenhurst, New York. Dear Dr. Tony, it's so thrilling every time we get to hear you describe your Hewlett High School reunion weekend. Quote, this year Richie Pollitt had to clean because he was new to the group. I'm picturing a house of fraternity brothers with their feet kicked up shouting, hey, pledge, you missed the spot, while watching Richie scrub the floors. And not a group 78-year-old, mostly retirees from Long Island. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Okay, we wound up 5-11. Not very good. But there was some worse than us. I guess that's one positive way to look at it. We weren't the worst team in the league.
Yes, it is.
I'm the I can only pick out the sound of you. I can only pick out